listening to the Caledonian Investment Management Macro Podcast, hosted by me, Andrew Thompson. Morning, Asim. Morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Andrew.
Morning. Hope you're both extremely well. I know a lot of people don't really like Donald Trump, but one really has to admire his resilience and robustness. They seem to have thrown absolutely everything at him to try and keep him out. But despite that, he seems to have won just about all of the swing states and the Senate and all the rest of it. So that's really quite remarkable in itself. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. But thinking about global markets and portfolios, what sort of difference will a Trump present presidency make? John, do you want to start?
Let's start with why Trump won. And I think it's normally the economy that's the key determinant of or the key swing factor. And I think the Biden administration have really taken a caning because of the rising living costs, really, that have hit, the broad base of America, and in fact globally over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, post-COVID. So I think people are voting with their pockets as they normally do. They don't feel better off. They felt better off under Trump than they do under Biden. And I think that was a big factor. But look, talking about where do we go from here? Obviously, it's all about where does inflation go from here? Where does growth go from here? What's going to happen to, real rates of interest and bonds? So perhaps we should focus there in terms of, the impact moving forward. And I think coming into the presidential election, market focus was definitely on the potential inflationary consequences of imposing assertive trade tariffs. They talked about 10% border tax on all goods coming into the US, 60% on those coming from China. And obviously, the one-off impact that's going to have on price levels, plus tougher immigration policies, a tightening labor market, that's obviously going to potentially add to inflationary pressures. And also, how on extending significant tax cuts, passed during President Trump's first term, would be financed. You mean extending the Tax Cuts and Job Act, lower marginal income for individuals and tax breaks for business would avoid one of the largest nominal tax hikes in US history. So, but to do so would add up to sort of 4 to 5 trillion in additional deficit spending over the next decade. So how are we going to pay for that? So the focus then shifted to, well, perhaps paying for that. The Trump administration might come hard down on the Inflation Reduction Act that was enacted during the Biden administration. And pre-election comments suggested that the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits for electric vehicles, renewable energy, could be at risk for possible repeal or adjustment. So what we've seen, that was the sort of the in the mix coming in to the election. And allied to that, where do we stand in terms of the US economy and the rest of the economy at the moment? The US is standing out. US exceptionalism seems to be working, doesn't it? The US economy is still growing robustly, although there are signs, of labor market weakness. The SARM rule's been triggered potentially. For now, people have relaxed on the view of a recession, but I suspect it may well reappear itself if real interest rates, continue to edge upwards to, 2% or so. But at the moment, inflation's a little bit above the Fed's 2% targets, come down materially from where it was in 2022. But fiscal deficits are really high. And the fiscal deficit is predicted to be roughly 7% of GDP by the end of 2024. And debt service costs are currently running around about 2% of GDP. So if they're really going to get to grips with things, they're going to need to make sure that, the inflation picture doesn't deteriorate from here, and that they somehow get on top or they don't allow the budget deficit to run out of control, forcing real interest rates up higher from here, and therefore consequently potentially bond yields higher from here. And I think, I think the thing is that, Trump is surrounding himself by people apparently that, have had a run at this before. And I think the suggestion is that now the Treasury Secretary appointment, which is likely to come sort of towards the end of November, that Scott Bessent appears to be coming in as one of the potential front runners, if not the front runner. And sort of from a market perspective, that would be a man that's a global macro man, a bit like myself. That founder of Key Square Group and a macro strategist, so there will be some sort of reassurance for markets potentially if somebody like Scott Bessent takes the lead at the Treasury Secretary. But it looks as if Trump is aware that back to the point, it's the economy, stupid, that really counts, and we don't want to be they don't want to be setting anything off which is going to cause inflation to spike out seriously from here. So actually, interestingly, they're talking, the Trump's team talking, are talking about a putting together a potential three economic plan, which we've touched on recently in recent writing, which looking to try and achieve a 3% growth rate through deregulation, reducing that 7% deficit to a 3% deficit. And using increased oil production, pushing up to 3 million barrels per day in order to try and keep inflationary pressures under control. So I think, there's still a lot of detail to come in, but certainly they're going to be working hard, I think, at trying to sort of get the balance right between sustaining the economy, trying to find ways to keep inflation in check. And at the same time, trying to do something about the fiscal deficit, because let's face it, if you look at the market reaction over the, and we're coming back to what the bond market's doing in a minute, but bond yields have moved up, 10-year bond yields have moved up to 4 point sort of 4 region, heading to 4.5%. Real interest rates, as I touched on earlier, are just a shade under 2% at 10-year at the moment. And obviously, budget deficits are a problem not just for the states, but globally. And how we fund those deficits are a big problem globally. So I think one of the big issues for the global economy over the next 12 months is what happens to po the policy reaction. What happens here? Because it's not just in the United States where we have these funding issues, but we have them across obviously Europe where deficits are growing and funding needs are growing, and government deficit funding requirements are going to be greater than the domestic funding pools, savings pools. So that puts pressure upwards on real rates everywhere, because and there's the potential for crowding out. So the next 12 months, the next few months could see real rates remaining firm, long bond rates remaining firm, and I think the key is going to be what happens during the course of 2025, globally. Will we see a change in, attitude and potentially a return to QE, because as perhaps one of the only way out? So I think, they're the key factors. Will Trump be quite as inflationary as initially thought? Potentially not. It looks like current, the positioning as in this early days of moving towards, forming his team, that they are cognizant of the need to get on top of deficits and get on and constrain the inflationary pressures. So I'd say that is a good thing for financial markets. We're not just going to see sort of runaway deficits from runaway inflation, but at the same time, we've still got big question marks everywhere over that, the high starting points for financial markets, certainly equity markets, but so they're the major factors. Growth, sustaining growth, tackling the financial deficits, and making sure inflation doesn't run away from here.
Yeah, thank you, John. Very comprehensive. Asim, your friend and mine, Donald Trump, markets, what do you think?
Right. Okay. So I think John has covered pretty much most of the side of things on how and what his policies look like. I think I would add that it's MAGA is or making America great again is protectionism. It's all about protecting tariffs and closing borders and spending and tax cuts, etc., which leads to the inflationary side. So I think it's still, if we don't, or if the DOGE, which is the new proposed team, doesn't get any government efficiencies, then you're looking at more spending and more deficits. And I think that's what the bond market has sensed. I think we talked about this previously, where I mentioned that it appears in the last 3 weeks that the US Treasury has lost control of the bond market, the long end of the bond market. And why would I say that is because the yield curve control was pretty much in place for the last few years, where the long end of the bond market yield curve control was done through supply and demand. And keeping the demand low or static at the long end and issuing at the short end pretty much helped in terms of the government funding and also keeping the rates in check. Over the last 3 weeks, that has changed. Something has broken in there because the bond market is tightening. The yields have gone up massively, and as John mentioned, and it's no longer controlled because if you look at the quarterly funding statement, there's nothing changed. It's still at around 315 billion at the long end, and the composition hasn't changed. So I think the bond market is definitely sensing something there. And one of the key things that we ask ourselves is that if it's nothing to do or nothing has changed in the issuance policy, and we don't see a material change in the issuance policy in the coming months anyway, till we see the new Treasury Secretary come in and spell out what they want to do, what has changed in terms of supply demand dynamics in the bond market? Our attention is taken to the regional banks and regional banks' balance sheets. They're sitting on around 570 to 600 billion worth of unrealized losses. So I think that's the key to keep an eye on. And a tightening bond market then automatically means that you'll be starting to look at revaluations or in the equity market as well. So I think that explains what the kind of weird behavior we have seen in the bond market recently, and also how the bond market is actually perceiving Trump admin or
Okay,
the
so we'll
administration.
come back on bond markets in a minute. I just wanted to ask about, how should I call liquidity? Maybe the invisible adrenaline that's been powering markets, certainly for this year. It's been an ever-present feature, albeit invisible. Do we anticipate liquidity remaining ever-present, John? Do we see it remaining a feature in 2025? What do you think?
Yeah, look, yes, obviously we've focused on this topic a lot this year, haven't we? And it's actually been one of the main reasons why we've continued to support a risk on strategy through the election, and obviously that's proved to be, the right strategy. Short rates are coming down still over the course of the next 12 to 15 months. We can see that obviously in terms of forward curve expectations in the United States, here in the UK. So we've got further short-term rate cuts to come. That's sort of market friendly and supportive from a sort of general liquidity super tanker perspective. Obviously, we've got the technicals, which is in the States, with there's the ability to run down the Treasury general account, etc., as required to keep things moving forward. And I think the other big issue that we've discussed or touched on a little bit earlier is whether or not we're moving from a period of QT, reduction in QT, but potentially could we move to a period of QE at some stage in 2025. It's not on the agenda at the moment, but I think it could very much come back into the agenda, perhaps midway through next year. So, there are obviously complex technical ways to keep things buoyant by running down the, as I say, the Treasury General Account, etc. So liquidity, I think is generally supportive for financial markets, and any periods of tightening and frustration can be met with technical adjustments. Asim has alluded to where the potential strains could come in the banking sector in the States, and obviously we saw earlier in the year the response to stresses and strains in the financial sector that came through and how they were alleviated. So I think, keeping a close eye on liquidity is important, and for the moment it remains supportive for financial assets. But like everything else, there's, we have to look at the relative value in things, and of course the key is going to be, okay, liquidity may well be generally supportive, but what about the economy? Is it still sustaining its growth rate? Are earnings still chugging on? They're going to be the key things that ultimately are going to determine where the stock markets go from here over the medium term. But yeah, for now, at least liquidity with rates cuts coming through should be supportive, in my opinion.
Thanks, John. Asim, what are your thoughts and views on liquidity ongoing or soon to end?
I think two things. One is that the quarterly issuance hasn't changed, so that there's no change in the deficit spending side or the deficit spending policy. The other one is M2 money supply. So last quarter, M2 money supply for the US was up 1.4%, and M2 money supply for China was up 6.8%.
Wow.
Now these are last quarter's figures, right? So in our research, internal research, we have seen that usually the change in M2 money supply translates into risk assets movements with a 6 months lag. So that would still mean that we are in that ample liquidity thesis that we presented earlier this year. We are still in that, and this would also mean that you're looking at more liquidity coming into the system. Now, as John mentioned, TGA is above 750 already at this point. Which is quite supportive, and we've got the RRP, which is the reverse repo account, is also sitting at around 238 billion. Now, with the stresses in the market, we just need to understand that if there is a crisis or if there is a some sort of stress or risk coming into the regional bank side of things, would this be able to address that with the liquidity already in place or these instruments in place? So I think with looking at it, 700 billion unrealized losses, and we've got already got TGA, which is fully up, and also RRP and accommodative Fed. I think we should be, or the system should be able to absorb it. Having said that, the yields at this point are extremely sensitive. As we discussed earlier, without any change in issuance, they're still moving upwards, and they're doing Fed's job to tighten the market.
Okay.
So yeah, so short answer, yes, liquidity is ample.
Okay, that's helpful, guys. Thank you. I know you wanted to talk about bonds, so let's pick it up here. So, strangeness in the bond markets, yields rising, bear steepening, whatever the appropriate phrases are, John. So, yeah, what is this strangeness in the bond market? What's it pointing to? Do we know?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually funny enough, it's sort of normal for this stage of the cycle where short rates are coming down, people are starting to anticipate a steepening of the yield curve. As you say, a bear steepening of the yield curve is coming through, and we're starting to see sort of 330s now moving positive, and that's coming through. And normally that's sort of that's a that suggests that the work that the economy will slow down from here, and that we will see further movements down on the short end and further steepening of the yield curve moving forward. The question is, what real rates of interest have we got here? And this is the big question that we need answering, because Asim touched on it in terms of the supply of bonds that's coming down the pike, and I touched on it earlier in the opening remarks as well. The problem here is that we've got large deficits and we've got large funding requirements everywhere, not just in the States, but everywhere. And, because we've seen not just in the States bond rates, 10-year rates rising up to a short 4.5%, but doing pretty much exactly the same in the UK as well, moving almost in lockstep with US long 10-year rates as well. So, and that in itself, that tightening in itself will slow economies down over time. Those rising real rates will slow economies down. So it's sort of suggesting that the economy, watch out here, because there could be a bit more of a slowdown coming down the pike than is currently factored into markets. But we do expect to see a further steepening of that yield curve. Now, the key from here is at what point do we see value emerging in longer term bond yields? And of course, with real rates at 2% and inflation expectations hovering around about just a little bit over 2.5%, there would appear to be some value maybe in sort of at 4.5 to 4.75. So we're starting to see some sort of, some people suggesting that maybe now is the time to extend duration. Maybe now is the time. But obviously at the moment, the focus maybe is it should be at the shorter end and as we eke out the remainder of the short term yield cuts. So I think the key question here is the impact of deficits and the funding requirements, whether or not real rates will continue to remain firm, whether or not we will see crowding out on a global basis, or whether or not and the consumer further upward pressure on longer end bond yields. And if we do, the reaction to that from governments, because and I think that is the thing which suggests that at some point we may have to come back to thinking about QE as the way of capping any rising long-term bond yields, purely because of this supply of bond rates, bonds coming down the pike across all the major economies over the course of the next 12, 18 months, and that impact that they will have on a crowding out effect on real yields. And so, where we are at the moment is the bond market, the real action is at the short end. The longer end is vulnerable to these supply concerns and rising real rates. And at some point, there's going to have to be a policy reaction to that. That's the way we're seeing it at the moment.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, thank you. Asim, what's on your mind about the bond market?
I think pretty much in line with John. I think that U.S. Treasury at this point has lost control of the bond market long end, and that is evident despite the YCC and no change in issuance or yield curve control and no change in issuance. The bond market is tightening, and that is a part of our own research, internal research that we've looked at 30 years worth of data. Every time we've seen two and 10 spread uninverting and 3 months and 10-year uninverting, it has always 100% led to some sort of recession afterwards. Now, is that going to manifest itself with the policy responses from Trump administration? We don't know yet, but that's what the data tells us, and that is exactly what is going on at this point, bear steepening, which John mentioned earlier on. Now, just to make a point here, that this is, and I keep repeating this, that there's no change in issuance policy, there's no change in supply from US Treasury, and still the bond market has moved materially. This is not a normal behavior. Now, why? And I think the point of concern for me again is the regional banks that are sitting on around 700 billion of unrealized losses. Those losses are held to maturity bonds, and if this tightens more, which it looks like it is already, what impact will it have on those regional banks? Will the Fed step in? And if we do go down the QE route, and start buying the long end just to stabilize the long end side, yield, that leads us to a similar kind of situation, which has been happening in Japan, which then leads to the question of, okay, you have capped the nominal rates, and the inflation is still somewhere around 2.5, 2. Let's say 2.4, and then the real rates are pretty much under one or under two. Sorry, under one, that would put it under one. Is that deflationary going forward? So there are a lot of questions at this point, but I think the bond market is definitely reacting to supply at this point.
Okay, helpful. Thank you both on the bond market. Yeah, we need to keep a close eye on it, clearly. Okay, final question, guys. Changes to portfolios. What's been going on? What changes have we made? Are we thinking about asking?
Right, so two changes we have made recently. One is in line with our thesis on long and short end of the bond market. We have gone further short. We've taken a little bit off from the long end of the yield curve, and we've added to zero duration, which is cash yielding cash. And we also have taken some profits off our Japanese equity position. We believe that BOJ is in a policy trilemma at this point, and the equity or Nikkei 225 already hit our 40K target. So I think it was a good point to trim and take some profits off the table.
That's helpful. John, final words from you, please.
Yeah, it's we've had a nice post-election sort of initial bounce, although it's a sort of checking a bit at the moment. Obviously, seasonally, this can tend to be a strongish period, and of course, we're all wondering whether or not we get the traditional Santa rally. So I think we are still risk on. We've taken a little bit of risk off the table. Momentum has sort of slowed a bit. Market has broadened out a bit. But valuations are high. So we're keeping a very close eye, as we've said before, on how much we can milk the momentum, liquidity, the seasonality factors. But we're not, we're not, we are very cognizant of the fact that, say if you take the US market itself, the equity risk premium is now, it's disappeared, So it means if there is anything untoward out there, there could be a sharp correction, which is why we started to move a little bit more, just a tiny bit more defensive. But I think we can, we're still in a position here where we're, as I say, eking out a few more gains, looking to eke out a few more gains in the market before perhaps taking a slightly more defensive position. I think that's, I think that would sum it up nicely, Asim.
Yeah, indeed it does. Yeah, sort of still enjoying the party, but dancing closer to the door, perhaps, than we might.
A very nice way of putting it, Andrew, yes.
Guys, thank you very much indeed. We'll try and do another one before the end of the year. Performance has been good in 2024 so far, so long may that continue. Thank you very much. Speak soon.
Thank
Thank
you.
you. This content is distributed by Alpha Beta Partners, a trading name of AB Investment Solutions, which is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This content is targeted at professional investors only.